Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Rogue Report podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Goldsmith, and I have a very special guest with me today. He was a key part of the 2010-11 team, which finished 10th in the Premier League, the highest position in 20 years, now playing in the beehive state of Utah with Real Salt Lake. It's Nedim Manua. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I was going to ask you about this Utah before getting to the football, but what's Utah like to live in? It's not really mentioned as...
No. It's not mentioned as anything, to be honest, but for the whole time I've been here, it's been amazing. It's a hidden gem. Like, I live at the base of some mountains. There's people go ski. There's like 5-10 ski resorts within 30 minutes of my house, so that you've got that in the winter for people. Then in the summer, it's beautiful. And wherever you look, you're literally flanked by mountain ranges. And it's, I feel very, very lucky to be here, because it's definitely is a hidden gem of America.
Looks quite peaceful.
Oh, it is, yeah. Definitely is that.
So the move to Sunderland, you came here on loan. How was that move come about? Were there any of the clubs interested?
Looking back, I think I wasn't. I think at the end of the season before, it seemed as though I'd need to be looking elsewhere if I wanted to be playing regular minutes, because I played a few games. I wasn't a guaranteed starter in the team at City at that time. So the time passed, and then we were doing pre-season. And again, it was a funny preseason, because the manager was, I wouldn't say we fell out, because nothing in particular happened, but we just didn't really click or connect, which was the same with quite a few players at that time. So the option to go on loan to Sunderland came up. And I remember initially feeling like a sense of shock, because it was the first time that I was actually going to be leaving City, because I'd been there from when I was 10 years old. And now this is 14, 15 years later. They're saying, you know, you've got to go and try something else. And as I said, I've never been anywhere before, but I was lucky because I could speak to Fraser Campbell, who's a good friend of mine, speak to Anton Ferdinand, you know, a good friend of mine again, about the club. So I went from being a bit nervous about it to all of a sudden thinking, well, this is going to be good and it's going to be a lot of fun. So as soon as they said they were interested and the offer was there, I was straight up the road.
Still keep in touch with Fraser and Anton Ferdinand?
Yeah, I still speak to Anton, and Fraser's a very good friend of mine now. Our wives are really close as well. Our kids are close in age, and they all get along. So yeah, he's probably the person from my time there who I'm definitely closest with. And this is he's definitely a friend who I'll be with for the rest of my life.
We did play quite well at Stadium Light in the first half of that season. We drew with Arsenal, Man United, beat City.
Yeah.
What was it like playing? Yeah, during that time, what was it like?
What was it like playing there? Well, it's a bit different to how I saw it in the last few years, to be honest. But I used to love it. I used to love getting there because it's one of the biggest stadiums in the country. And it's definitely got one of the most passionate fan bases as well. So every time you go in there, and if we weren't playing that well, we'd feel a bit of the tension, but it wasn't really, it was more like anxiety from their part that we should be doing better, which is similar to what we felt on the field anyway. But when we were doing well and we were on top of teams, it was such a hostile place for them to come. And you always felt that every time you're doing well, we had the advantage. It was almost like a 12th man and teams would crumble. I've seen some really good teams go there and think they can go out and play one way or another. But when we were there, Sunderland, we were going right about them, pressing them, getting in their faces. And it was loud. It was, you know, those are some of the best moments of my career, because as I say, it's such a passionate fan base. And when you provide them with something which they love to see, you know, it gives you that little bit of extra energy.
Yeah, we were high flying around October time, and then of course the
incident,
St. James's Park.
Yes, the incident. Yeah.
Yeah, and 5-1 defeat. What went wrong that day?
Do you know, it's that's a hard one. You know, that's a hard one to get ahead around, because we're very excited for the game. We've been looking forward to that game. And it's, as is probably the case for any team that's had that derby lined up, as soon as the fixtures come out, you look to see when it's going to be. And especially, like, you want to go there and try and put performance on them. And we were in good form. Or, so, like, weren't that good form, but we felt we could have won the game. So then to go there, and then just, I think football at times can be about momentum. And we were trying our absolute best to make a difference and to play well in the game, but things didn't start well. And then we could never really get a stronghold in the game. And things were going from bad to worse. And I think on that particular day, and as is the case with football, which is probably why we love it, anyone can beat anyone. And you don't necessarily need to have 30 chances to score X amount of goals. So they were far more clinical than us. They had momentum, they had the lead, and they were playing without the pressure. Whereas from once we went behind and we were away from home and things like this, we just couldn't really get a foothold in it. And it was so frustrating because this is a game which we're all looking forward to. We never threw in the towel, but then in the same breath, we never really got better, which was a killer. And that game to this day is one which is probably one of the only few in my career where I look back and I'm still like, I wish I could get it back. There's so much disappointment about how that game went because it could have been a lot better and it should have been a lot better, but it never materialized. And it's one of those games, as I say, where anything we tried, just nothing clicked.
What about the dressing room afterwards? You know, just coming back in after that's just happened. What was it like in the dressing room?
You're just distraught. You're absolutely distraught because you know how big that game is. You know, not many people will be lucky enough in their career to play in a game of that magnitude. You know, the fact that we were, it's a game where we take the bus from Sunderland across to Newcastle. You've got like helicopter escorts, police escorts. They've got fans waiting outside for you, people swearing, you're throwing stuff at you. You know, this is a big, big game. And for it to have gone the way that it went, like if we would have lost, we'd have been disappointed. But to lose the way that we did, like we're absolutely crushed. Because as I say, this is ultimately one of the two biggest games of the whole season, regardless of wherever you finish in the league. And as I say, we were devastated, and we knew that, well, one thing that I knew anyway was being someone who lived in Seaham and I would go to Sunderland and so on. You can't escape that moment. That's it for the rest of the season. No matter how well you do, this result will be spoken about. So now you're in a place where you're almost thinking, we need to play another game again. We need to play another game again because we have to bring the trust back amongst ourselves, but then also show to the fans that this isn't who we are. And, you know, because if that's ultimately who we were, then, you know, we're a bad team. But as the season panned out, we saw in the end that we weren't a bad team at all.
We certainly had a good turn in form after this game.
Yeah.
Because we went on a run where we beat Stoke, drew at Tottenham. We got into it and beat Chelsea 3-0, of course. But what changed during that?
I think at times, whether it's just in life or just in football, you have to try and figure out where rock bottom is. And in that moment, in that Newcastle game, we really couldn't have been worse. For as much as like it was a very, very bad day, but it wasn't like everybody on the field had a terrible performance. But we knew that the standards that we had were ones whereby that isn't acceptable. So for everyone, it was almost like, all right, we're resetting, we're remembering that moment, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we don't drop to that level again, whether it's a case of defending, attacking, just being cohesive or just whatever. Like we have to do better than that, especially in all the games to come. And again, it was almost like a countdown began again for the next Newcastle game, for the next derby game. Honestly, that's how it was. Like I remember clear as day Steve Bruce saying to us after the game that we owe the fans and the city based on what happened after that game. And it rang so true because that's, you know, I don't think you can live in Sunderland, live in Newcastle and not talk about football. For as much as it has everything else, that's at its core. You know, those are the people support you, you represent them. And that game is the biggest time of the season for them ultimately. Obviously you can win trophies and so on, but that game will always matter. So yeah, we felt like we let ourselves down, we let the club down, you know, we let the fans down and all this stuff. So people were almost like remotivated, and you reset and you started again. You said, well, that's not going to happen again. And ultimately, with the players that we had in the club at the time, these are, as we've seen with one or two of them, these are top players, people who go on to do achieve great things, and they raised the bar. We all raised the bar, and as a consequence, training, you could argue, was more competitive. Every game was more competitive, and no one, almost like after that game, no one was guaranteed a position. So you had to earn the trust of the manager, earn the trust of your teammates, earn the trust of the fans again. So it didn't surprise me that we started playing well after that.
What was Steve Bruce like to play for?
He was, so I didn't know much about him really before I joined. Like I had a new teammate, a new people who played with him, but we never really spoke about him. But he was I think he's good because he represents what it is up there. He's a very, very passionate man, and he has his ideas about how he wants you to play and so on and so forth. But it always comes from a place whereby you are a committed player to your teammates around you and to the people that come to watch you, you know. So even if you were, say you could be the best player in the world, but if you lack the heart and commitment, you're not going to play for him. So that was something whereby in the team, everywhere you looked, everyone was basically on the same page and committed to doing the same thing. Whether that was Bolo Zenden, who's played in Champions League, won Champions League and stuff, or, you know, it could be someone that was coming through the academy at the time. Like, everyone shared that same goal and same belief. And that, a lot of that was down to him and the way that he made us train. Like, you had to be fit, you had to be competitive, and you had to understand why you were doing what you were doing. And yeah, he was good. He was definitely a good person to play for. And the fact that he played as well in the Premier League, he's someone who you can talk to about pretty much anything, really. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
You yourself played most games in the season. I know you had a bit of an injury layoff, but
I think it was 31, 32 league games, something like that. Shouldn't do bad.
Yeah, pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Chelsea game, you only scored one goal for us, and of course yes. It was an incredible goal.
Thank you very much.
It felt like you went through the entire Chelsea team. You know, it just felt like you just went past everybody, and then you slotted past Cech. And at the time, Chelsea, you know, had gone 10 games, I think, without conceding a goal.
Yeah, that's right.
So what went through your head when the ball came at you and you just went for it, basically?
You know, what's really interesting about that day, I'll provide like full context. So I don't know if we were in great form going into that game, but Steve Bruce, he said just before the game, you know, this is a big game. This, because it was a primetime game on Sunday. And I think it was. And he said, listen, if you guys want to make a name for yourselves as a team and for people to recognize how good you are, you have to do it in London, and you have to do it in London on TV. And here we were in London on TV, and we're going out to this game. And, you know, thankfully the result went our way and we won 3-0. But then even to reference my goal, there are a few things which are strange about it. So I was playing right back. As the play is developing and the ball drops to me, I'm in the middle of the field, even though Jordan Henderson was out on the right wing crossing the ball in. So I don't know why I was there in the first place. I don't know why he was out there either. But then from when it fell, it was just a gap. I guess it was just a gap. And I thought, just why not? And ultimately, at the end of the day, even though people don't do stuff like that all the time, we are all professionals. So we do actually have an ability to be able to actually run towards a goal. What a feeling, what a moment. And even for the context of the game, I think it was just before halftime. So that gave us a massive boost, which is why we were able to go out in the second half and do what we did. So the timing of it, regardless of whether it would have been a tap-in or, you know, goal from 100 yards out, like it was incredible. But yeah, going into the dressing room at halftime there, 1-0 up against Chelsea, who everyone thought was were this, that, and the other. You know, they were a good team, but I just don't think they respected us enough. And on that day, we ended up showing them that, you know, if you're going to play against us, you have to give us your all, or you're probably going to suffer.
Yeah, it was incredible, really, just to be there. And you look quite shocked yourself when you scored. I don't know if you don't celebrate.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you for a fact what it was. It was not shock, it was tiredness. I literally did not have a breath within my body to be able to celebrate. That's one of my biggest regrets in my career. I wish I would have celebrated that goal, but I just wasn't capable. I just couldn't breathe.
That must have been a great night of celebrating afterwards.
It certainly was, yeah. It certainly was. It was probably a couple of nights worth. But, you know, those moments, they're few and far between. To beat a team 3-0 away from home in the Premier League is unlikely. To do it at a place like Chelsea, again, unlikely. And to do it on national TV, again, these all things just fell into place. So that was a great moment. And I think everyone that played in that game or watched that game, you know, you can still talk to them about it now, even though that's going on 10 years ago.
But things were going steady for us. And then January, Darren Bent shocked everyone, left. Mm-hmm. Was that a surprise, or was there a feeling of him wanting to leave? Or?
No. I think, so I was friends with Darren, but I wasn't like really tight with him. So we would never really speak about the ins and outs of life and so on and so forth. So it was a surprise for me, surprise for most people. Maybe one or two teammates knew something was going on or something was in the works. But yeah, it really was. It was a big surprise. And, you know, he was our talisman, really. So to lose your main goal scorer was a blow and a surprise. But then, you know, when you live up there, there's so much drama anyway. I think it just added to the whole context of the season, did it not?
Definitely.
Like, don't get me wrong, I think he was a good guy and he was a good teammate. But in that moment, I think the decision must be made for something which was just for him. And it was a shame. based on the fact that we were on a roll and maybe what, who knows what we could have achieved. But I think to have like, I think it was Asamoah and Danny Welbeck and people behind us, and it would have been Fraser if he wasn't injured, you know, that's still not too bad, really.
We had just throughout the team, there was just so many players who we would love anyone from that team now. How much was morale affected by Darren's departure?
I don't think it was morale as such. It was just, we were just surprised. We were just surprised. And football matters are always football matters. A player can never leave without the club saying that the player can leave unless, you know, they're out of contract. So it was something which I guess both parties wanted. So ultimately, we just had to move on. But things would inevitably change because now those are big boots to fill. You know, he did score a lot of goals and he did help the team out and he was a good guy around the place. So he was going to be missed. But, you know, the season carries on going. So, yeah, from a morale standpoint, didn't really affect us. But I'd say we just had to try and find a change.
In that season, Jordan Henderson was there, played about.
Yes.
He was a mainstay in the team. And did you have any idea from playing with him that he would go on to have the success that he has had?
Honestly, I wasn't sure, you know, because I thought he was a good player. I really, really did. And he had so many attributes which were going to be beneficial, but he had to learn about the game and other things and what is ultimate, what's important and what's not important, because he could essentially run and do this and do that. But like, you can find other people that can do that. But he was a good player. But I think at times he was very, he was the representation of a fan that was playing within the team that he supported. So from an individual perspective, he can play, train, do whatever, but his eyes were only set on, say, when we were playing Newcastle, which was good to a point. But in terms of bigger picture, if you want to go and try and play for England or anything like that, you have to try and expand your game and learn more about what it takes to not just beat Newcastle, but to beat all the teams in the league and stuff like this. So I think he had the potential to do that, but in that moment, he wasn't doing it. But as time passed, he started to get better and better and better at the craft, at his own craft. And then his things which he had before then just added to it. So to see where he is now doesn't really surprise me, because he's someone who for years I've really liked as a player. And even when people were saying, no, he's not this or he's not that, he's not whatever, I said, all right, then we'll see. And ultimately, that he was one of the best players in the Premier League. And to know that that was the guy who I played with and who someone had on their books 10 years ago is incredible to see.
It's always nice to see a local lad doing as well as he is.
Sure. And he's the thing with him, like, he is Sunderland through and through. Like, no questions asked at any point. He's as committed to supporting that city as like anyone else who's on the street who's not getting the same chance to play.
During your season, who was the best player to play alongside, though?
That is a good question. I think that year saw a bit of a rise for Danny Welbeck. I really enjoyed playing with Steve Malbron. To be fair, just everyone, like, looking back and looking through that team, it was a strong team. It was a really, really strong team. I run through the team. We had Stefan Sessegnon, Bolo Zenden, Danny Welbeck, Darren Bent, Asamoah Gyan, Jordan Henderson, Lee Cattermole, Kieran Richardson. Like, this is I could keep going. Like, that's a really good team. And I think the fact that at the start of the season, the goals were very clear. We wanted to finish in the top 10 of the Premier League, and that didn't feel like a million miles away. I think that kind of says that it was a really good team. Each individual, as good as they may be, they also fit into the team. So in terms of who they enjoy playing with the most, like, even not even mention people like Phil Bardsley, you know, Michael Turner, Titus Brambles, like, there's literally so many. But it's just, what can I say? It's just everyone really enjoyed it with everyone.
As Anton Ferdinand was there at the time as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he moved to QPR when you did as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I spent a lot of years with Anton. Thankfully, he's a nice guy. Couldn't say that about everyone who I've spent a lot of years with, but we won't get into him. Let's not talk about him on the podcast, yeah.
Was there any talk of you staying past alone?
Do you know what? I don't think there was. I think there was scope for it to be there, but I always thought I was going there for a year. And then my aim was to go back in at City and see if I can break into that team. So I don't know if that feel was something which changed the way that, say, Steve Bruce or whoever considered me as the season was progressing. But, you know, that's how it was. And ultimately, I never had a call where someone said, Sunderland have now put a bid in and now you should go there. That never really came. Looking back, if the bid would have come in, I probably would have gone straight there, because that next season is when I ended up leaving City on a permanent deal anyway. But it, it never materialised. I don't know if I was the reason for that, or if it was a club or someone weren't interested, or City weren't interested in selling at the time. But it just never came about. But as I say, with hindsight, I think it's definitely something I would have seriously considered at that point.
So you did move to QPR in 2012 and spent 6 years there, was it?
Yeah, 6.5 years it was, yeah.
So a lot of managers come and go, but who was kind of best relationship with?
Best relationship with, I'd probably say either... I had good relationships with a lot of them, to be honest. In fact, probably didn't have a good one with maybe one or two. But I really enjoyed working with Mark Hughes and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, because there were people, like with Mark Hughes, I ended up understanding their training patterns and why they did what they did. And you could always speak to them and ask them questions. You wouldn't, with Mark Hughes, it wasn't a guarantee that you'd be playing every single week for anyone, but you could speak to him and understand why he was doing what he was doing. And then with Jimmy, he's just like, I suppose I'm just really lucky, because those were two strikers who I used to watch as a kid, and they were playing for the best teams. And I actually like really, really loved them as players. And then when I met them, someone like Jimmy, he's a really good guy as well. So to then be getting coached by someone who's been at the top level and is trying to, at the time, was trying to achieve a coaching status at the top level as well, it was very good.
Is there any sort of weird training methods that any of them had?
Weird training methods. With Jimmy, things tended to be quite long, and certain sessions, like it'd be about the fitness, would be like a huge part of it. And I initially thought, oh, this is hard, because he had different structure. Because normally with players, you'd be off the day after a game. That's the case in England, but in other countries, it's not the case. So he would change the schedule so that we'd come in on the Sunday to do recovery work. But recovery work is harder than some people's training sessions on a Monday normally. So you had to kind of break that pattern. But then you got to a point where you basically thrived in it, and you were expecting it, and you felt better from it. But it was considered radical, because it's against traditional coaching patterns in England.
So what was your favourite game to play while at QPR?
It wasn't necessarily my best game, but my favourite game, interestingly, was the first season I went, was when City won the league for the first time. So here's my bigger picture moment. So the year before was when I was at Sunderland, and that's when United played Sunderland, and United thought they'd won the title at Sunderland, if you remember. Do you remember
yes.
that one?
Oh,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So that was my old team. And now I was at the Etihad with my new team in QPR playing against my other old team in Man City. And things pan out in a way whereby, even though at QPR we lost, we stayed up on the last day. City won the league. City were the team I supported. And then United, the team who had been my nemesis for like 20 years, they were now being humiliated by my old set of supporters in Sunderland. Mm-hmm. So that day to me featured everything. And it was perfect. Yeah, that's without doubt one of the best days of my life. Not just my career, my entire life. So yeah, that was a very special moment for me.
You see one moment in that game after they've won the title. You see Djibril Cissé celebrating with Nasri, even though they're on the opposite teams.
Yeah, exactly. It was insane. So I've seen in the past teams whereby both teams stay up on the same day because they're playing against each other and the crowd's like doing whatever. But I've never seen a team win a league and a team stay up in that same moment. So all the players on the field when the whistle was done were happy, and everyone in the stadium was celebrating at the same time. Both sets of coaches were celebrating for different reasons at the same time as well. So it was just a big party as opposed to an actual game of football, which is, you know, those moments are very, very rare.
You moved to Real Salt Lake City in Utah. How different is playing in the MLS to the English leagues?
It's completely different. It's completely different from... for lots of different reasons, really. Not necessarily just because, you know, the football is ultimately different, but just the way that it's run. So, for example, the players aren't owned by the teams. They're owned by the league. And so as a consequence, everyone has to do this, everyone has to do that. There's no club that makes the decision about this is what we want to do, that's what we want to do. Because if you make that decision, everybody else has to do it as well. So it's very different. And then even with travel, there's no travel 10 miles or whatever to get to Newcastle from Sunderland. You're flying to every destination that's away. And some of those flights range from maybe from where we are. You can be flying for an hour, or you could be flying for five. So it is it's different. And that you're flying to different time zones as well. So yeah, it's different, but it's what I wanted in my career at that moment, because it almost makes you have to relearn the game and relearn just what it's like to be a professional, especially because most of the players over here I've not watched before. So when you go out to a game, instead of playing against someone for the 10th time in the last like 5 years, now it's like, well, if you're playing someone for the first time, and to be 30 plus doing that, it keeps you young.
I can't imagine that there's many away fans again.
Zero. There are probably like four teams who have away fans travel. that's pretty much it. But the rest of it, it's just it's home. And it's don't get me wrong, the whole bouncing stadium and heckling and whatever and crazy atmospheres, I think that exists more in the UK and just around the world compared to here. But then here, where I'm at in Utah, I can bring my kids to games and know that they're going to be all right. So that's also, you know, at the age that I'm at now with the three kids, that's a big benefit for me.
Yeah. Last season, you did play against Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
There's something happened in that game. talk us through that.
So in the game itself, I was we were just playing. It's just a normal game. It was my second time playing against him in my career because I played against him in a preseason game one time. And there was nothing being said. There's no real communication. And then just out of the blue, he just dragged me to the floor, like from around the neck. So I was on the floor and I was looking like, what are you doing? Because the ref had blown for the free kick. So I'm looking at him saying, what are you doing? And then he started having a go at me, telling me to get up. So the original me from playing in England, it's just, I'm not having it. So I got up and I started politely telling him where to go. Just ever so politely, you know, nothing too vulgar. So I was telling him that, and then from there it was like so awkward for the rest of the game, just because he was always we're ultimately playing against each other, and he's running his mouth, so I'm giving him some back and all this stuff. But then when corners are coming, we're just standing next to each other, so it's a bit personal. But anyway, time passes in the game. He ended up scoring the winner, and then he's celebrating my face, but I didn't really notice it at the time on the field. Otherwise, I might have reacted differently. Okay. So then after the game, he came into our dressing room like 5 minutes after we'd walked off the pitch. But the way that doesn't happen, especially like if you do that in England, someone's going to stop you at the door. But because America is kind of built around its stars as opposed to its teams, they kind of let people just move around as they please. So he came in and he was asking me, oh, have you calmed down yet? Have you calmed down yet? I have a big smile on his face. But like, this was serious to me. So again, I politely told him to leave the dressing room if he would be so kind. Well, yeah, I was giving it that, but yeah. Ultimately it was, it's just one of those things. Like, I think one of the problems that I have with this league over here is that, as I say, because it's built so heavily around its stars, the league go over the top with it, and sometimes the players do as well. Because he was the best player in the league last year, but it was made easier for him because people were almost scared to go up against him. But ultimately, if you don't go up against him, then he's going to just dominate. Whereas, say, back in England and stuff like that, it's the same reason people love seeing the FA Cup in January, because you can find some of these best teams with the best players go and play against people who, you know, might have regular jobs or, you know, are playing 3-4 divisions lower. But they're going to go and make it as hard and as hostile as possible for the players who they know are better than them. So as a consequence, you know, you see real commitment and good games, and that's why you see upsets. But over here, like, nah, stuff like that doesn't really happen, which I think is a bit of a shame. But ultimately, it's just how it is. So I was just reminding people that where I'm from, you know, nobody can come into your house and do whatever, and then you just sit there and take it just because they're a big man. That's not the way you work, and that shouldn't be the way that you should be working going forward.
It must be quite warm during games, you know, like the temperature must be ridiculous sometimes.
Yeah, so our league starts in March, and say last year, for example, there was, in the same day, where we played in Houston, and it was like 25 degrees and humid. But then someone played in Colorado, and it was minus 12 that they were playing in. So there's a bit of a spread, you could say. There's a bit of a spread. And then come summertime, it gets the silly season. The last place you want to be in the summer is going to Dallas, going to Orlando, going to wherever, because the temperatures can really be from where we are in Utah, it gets to 35, 40 degrees. Mm. So it's spicy. It's a good test.
If you could put together a five-a-side team of players that you've played with, you can put yourself in the team or you don't have to. It's up to you. And a manager. Mm-hmm. What's the five-a-side team you're going to go for?
That I've played with anywhere?
Yeah, just your whole career, yeah.
There would be bits of bias in there just because these are my people, but I'd start with Joe Hart in goal. Okay. I still think he's like generational talent, even though people say fell off and whatever. He's the last person I want to be taking a shot against, I'll be honest with you. The last keeper on this earth. Centre-back, I'd probably go with Vincent Kompany, just because he's a proper, for as good as he was with the ball and all this stuff, he's a proper winner. Midfield, I'd go with... you know, it's probably just going to be in the City team this. I can only apologise, but you see what I'm saying in a second. I'd probably go with Yaya Toure and... Oh, here's a problem. And David Silva. And up front, I'd have to go with Sergio Aguero.
Okay, I can understand that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I was running by people in my mind, and there's been some really, really good players, but like those, some of those guys are icons, so I can't really kick them out of the team.
And manager wise, who would you go for?
Ooh, now there's the question. I would say, just for how I got along with him, I'd say Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink. Yeah, that's what I'd go for, because I really did get along with him. He's someone I still speak to now. Yeah, I know it's a surprise. I know it's a surprise because I've had lots of good managers, but ultimately, I think if he would have had some of the like good teams and good club situations at others, I think he would have done well. We just never made it there.
Well, I'll let you go, yeah. Adam, but thank you for your time.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for the call.
Did you manage to watch Sunderland Till I Die?
Do you know what? As weird as this may be, two of my clubs I played for in Sunderland and Man City have both got documentaries out, and I can't watch them for some reason. It feels a bit weird. It feels a bit weird watching it. But I think a lot of people that I know, they enjoy they're enjoying the drama of the Sunderland one. But then also when I was in the Championship with QPR, I was playing against Sunderland, and I could feel the tension as well. So yeah, I'm going to try and avoid it, because my memory of being there is a great one, and it's one of the most enjoyable years of my career. So I'd like to just keep it that way in my mind for now.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard it's a little bit different though.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.